This is Phil Ferrand.
And I am driving home.
It's Thursday today. It has been a long week. Good week. Got a lot of things done. Have a lot more things to come. It is episode 51. Woohoo! One more until the big 52. And I will have been doing this for a year. I should say right now that we may get interrupted. This will be a first for the podcast. Usually I just go ahead and shut off my phone when I'm doing these podcasts. However, I have had a little either scheduling mistake or something, and so I need to keep my phone on. We've had some house guests this week. A couple of guys had come in for a conference in town and they needed some place to stay, and so we were more than happy for them to stay with us. And we had chatted about possibly going out to supper tonight, and so I set up the Ruby Tuesdays thing because I like to go to Ruby Tuesdays because of the good garden bar that they have there. And I crossed paths with them somewhere, and they're from out of town, so then I'm like, okay, did I tell them the right Ruby Tuesdays? Are they waiting for me? So I'm not exactly sure where they are. And that was like an hour ago we were supposed to get together. So I finally decided, I called because I had a cell phone. So I called, left a message and said, I hope you aren't at another Ruby Tuesday. Sorry. But anyway, so I did leave a message for them. So if I do get a call from them, I may put this on pause and field that call and then come back. So we may actually have a truncated episode, but we'll just see how this goes. I think I am ready to conclude that I have finished the 21-day challenge. I think it's with no grace. I don't know. The 21-day challenge to go for 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing with no grace. I did it with a little grace before, but I think I have. There's some things that are just really, really borderline, but in my spirit's been good through all of this. And this would actually be like day 28. And certainly I am going to continue with this philosophy of not complaining, not criticizing, not gossiping, because, you know, what's the point? I mean, at the end of the day, life is good. And when we're complaining, we can color it in such a way that we conclude that life is not good, and that's not great. I'm still working on getting Amanda and the Skleberry Tree edited up. I had intended to be done with that by now, but this super secret project I've been working on, it's taken some time, and I finally had to just say, okay, no more working on the super secret project until Amanda and the Skleberry is out. So we're going to just go ahead and get that taken care of first, and then I'll get back to the super secret project. Although the super secret project is very interesting in conjunction with what we're talking about today. So I'm just going to keep referring to it as the super secret project, but I'm going to work that in today, I think. This week, I'd like to talk about life as game. I mentioned that last week I was thinking about making it my topic because Jane McGonigal, I think that's the way you say her name, it's McGonigal, Jane McGonigal. You can look her up on the internet. Had done a talk at the 2007 February TED Talks, which always have a lot of really interesting speakers. And most of the time, they have those video talks up sometime in March. And so I had delayed a week thinking maybe they'll have her video up by the time this week rolls around. But in fact, they didn't. So I went out and I gathered some information off the internet, watched a couple of her other videos, and there's some interesting things here. She has her PhD in some kind of behavioral science, I'm thinking. I can't remember for sure. And she's involved with the Institute for the Future or something like that. Anyway, she is a social game designer. And the games that she designs are specifically built to potentially help us solve some of the big problems in the world. For instance, the problem of the high level of oil consumption that we have. They developed a game that was played by lots and lots of people, where you would go and you would interact, and the scenario, you would say where you lived, and then it would tell you the conditions where you were, whether there was rioting, whether there was a limited supply, or no, this was with no oil. So you were in a scenario where you were pretending to be involved in a world where there was no oil. And the question would be, how would you survive? What would you do? What would the scenarios be? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a social game. And so as you complete these assignments, you get points for completing assignments. And then as you post media about your assignments, people can respond to it. And so there's a competitive element to it. But there's also a cooperative element to it. And it sounds pretty interesting. Her latest game is called Evoke. And you can probably look it up on the internet. It's called Evoke. And it is, every week there's a new challenge. It is going on right now. Every week there is a new challenge. And you have a mission that you go on. And then you write up about being on these missions. And that's submitted to the website. And, you know, thousands of people play these games. And it's very cool. And Jane McGonigal's approach is that she believes that we can use social gaming to actually marshal a lot of mental brain power and potentially come up with new solutions for the problems that have plagued the world, which is pretty interesting. I was watching one talk of hers, though, that got me more interested than that. And the reason that it got me more interested than that is I am all for marshaling as many resources as we can to apply ourselves to the problems of the world. I'm a firm believer in the fact that God has given us this world and given us free will, and we can decide what we're going to do about it. And we can decide the types of cultures and the types of environments we wish to create. And frankly, if we pollute our world and pollute it so much that it makes it unlivable, then that's our problem. God isn't necessarily causing the droughts and causing that type of suffering. It's because of what we've done to the world. So I think it's a great idea, and I think it's cool that she is getting people together. I think her optimism over humans being able to solve all of these problems neglects an important element of the human condition. And I've touched on this in previous podcasts. I think that any time you focus on one side or the other of human nature and do not factor in the flip side, that you're going to have expectations that are going to lead you to the wrong place. So the scientists who believe that science will eventually overcome all our problems and create a utopia fail to factor into the fact that we have a destructive side to our nature, which I call the flesh. And this destructive side to our nature will always be destructive as long as we're humans and in this environment. And so having an overt amount of optimism about how science is going to solve all our problems, I think, does not factor in the fact that whatever problems science solves, we are still going to have the problem of our destructive natures. And it will find new ways to be destructive. And on the other side, if all you do is focus on how hideous humans are, And use that as a justification to say, well, I'm religious and see how wonderful I am. And everybody else who isn't religious like I am, well, they're just hideous. I think you gloss over the fact that there is within everyone this marvelous spark of God that leads to creativity, that leads to wonderful inventions. And God is speaking to people every day, all day long. So in my opinion, if you're going to make any plans for the future, if you're going to try to do any kind of interactive moving with people and trying to get people marshaled to do these things, you really have to have an appreciation of both sides of human nature. And in listening to Jane McGonigal, she's an optimist, and she very much likes, that's my phone call. Gotta go, be right back. Okay, that was them. Good. Okay, everything was good. They had looked at their schedule wrong, and they were actually starting their last session at 3:45 as opposed to ending the last session, so that's fine. But then also their regional guy wanted to take them out to dinner, and they were going to Lambert's. And if you've ever been in this area and you've never been to Lambert's, that's good Ozark cooking with a home of the throwed rolls. They just throw food at you at Lambert's. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, so I was saying that while Jane McGonigal is very optimistic, and that's great when people are optimistic, I think some of her vision about what is going to happen in the future in terms of gaming does not actually factor in the flesh side of humanity. Because while she expects that there's going to be this mass exodus to some type of online gaming environment, which I agree there will be, she feels like the big thing will really be games to improve human existence, not necessarily games as an escape from human existence like World of Warcraft. And I actually have the opposite view. I've said for years and years and years that really what's going to happen is that in countries where there is, in a term that Jane McGonigal used, where there is a cognitive surplus, where you're not completely striving just to survive every day, in those countries, I fully expect to see an exodus to online gaming. But I expect it to be constructed worlds with rules that are more palatable to the flesh than an augmented reality that sits on top of our existence here. Because our existence here, the flesh within each of us, and as a group and a collage of efforts and motivations, the flesh is not really that interested in improving our existence, our real existence. It would rather distract us with a false existence and thereby keep us dissatisfied. So, setting that aside, however, I thought that in the one speech that I was listening to, that Jane McGonigal really had some interesting things to say about gaming per se. And then in another speech she did, she actually followed up with a really interesting idea that I think has merit. In one speech I was watching, she was talking about the invention of gaming, the invention of dice, and she was quoting Herodotus, and he was relating a story. She said some people think it's apocryphal, but it's an interesting story in its own right about how in one community, gaming had been invented to help them deal with a shortage of food. That what people would do is they would eat one day, and then they would play games the next, and then eat the next day, and then play games the next. And playing games got their mind off their physical conditions and allowed them to endure that better. And out of that story and out of other things that Jane McGonigal has learned over the years, she's really come up with some basic principles about gaming. And I thought they were very good. And they were that gameplay is about immersion, first of all. It's not about story and graphics or fantasy. in her mind, but it's about an interactive system. It's about being engaged in this system and engaged with other players, and that's the core of gameplay. And I thought that was a very good observation, because I agree with that. She was also saying that games can be a constructive response to a social problem, and they can be. My dad, when he and my mom were itinerating, or when they were pioneering a church up in Boyne City, and it was really cold, and they didn't have much to do, and they didn't have a whole lot of food, my dad would invent games, and they would sit around and play games. I remember when we had the big ice storm a couple of years back, and we lost electricity. One of these things that we did is we invented a card game called Blackout. And we sat huddled, you know, around candles and those things, and we played this game, Blackout. And it was a way to get our mind off of what we were experiencing at that point. And this follows on to the next point that she talks about, that games, many of them have been invented to alleviate suffering. That games are the ultimate happiness engine for Jane McGonigal. She said, when we're playing a game, we are not suffering. And that's an interesting phrase, because we've talked in the past of the quote that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And this goes right along with this, how that suffering is really a matter of perspective. And what games do is help us to change our perspective. And then finally, she said that games feed a hunger for engagement, feed a hunger for relationship. And I think that's all very, very true. But there was a really interesting phrase that she used in another speech when she was talking about her talk at the TED Talks, which I haven't seen yet. But she talked about treating life as a game. And the example that she gave was that she and her husband at one point needed to move. And she said they had about a 2-hour window to do this fairly complicated move. She said they were living in San Francisco, and she said, we decided to do it ourselves. She said, we should have gotten someone else to do it, but we decided to do it ourselves. She said the move actually took 18 hours, and they spent all night moving. But the way they got through it was they treated it as a game. She said, and every time we finished taking a load over to the new place, we'd say, okay, we finished that level. Time to get on to the next level. And now we got to face the big furniture boss at the end of this level. And what that would do is it would re-image their experience as a game, and therefore alleviate the suffering that they would experience if they looked at this huge thing they had to do and would say, well, there's no way this is going to happen and we're going to fail at this. But instead of doing that, it was like, hey, we got through that. Come on, come on, go, go, go. And I think this is a really good concept to do this. I mean, this is partly how I treat things. You know, we're doing a big deploy this week. We're taking over receding. And we do thousands of receipts a night, and they really need to be done for this organization that I'm working with. And Friday night is going to be our first night to take over, and our first receipts are going to be printed on Monday. I'm getting my mail. So this could be like a high-stress thing and all this kind of thing, but, you know, this week, as the stress started to build, I just said, you know what? God is good. He's helped you up to this point. He's guided you. You've done your homework. You've done as much as you can. Yes, there may be some things that come up, but God's going to help you through those things, and he's going to help you get there, and this is the next thing we have to do, and we're going for it. And that philosophy of God has helped us, he will continue to help us, is really like saying that, you know what? Everything's in control. I'm not destined for destruction here. There's a plan, there's a purpose, there's some place that we're going to accomplish something and move forward. I'm backing into my garage. And really, when you get down to it, what's interesting to me is when you start talking about this idea of life as game, one of the reasons that that works in terms of helping you cope more with the experiences of your life is because when you call something a game, all of a sudden you've tapped into some connotations that didn't exist before you labeled it a game, because games have designers. Games are not designed to crush you. In fact, they're specifically designed by the designer to be entertaining, to be difficult, to require diligence, to require practice, perhaps, but the goal is obtainable in the game. The game and games are also built to help you achieve something. There is a path to that achieving. So if you conceptualize and you listen to your flesh conceptualize of life as being undesigned and rugged and filled with pain and filled with failure, and there's not really anything you can do to succeed, if you conceptualize of it that way, you are more likely not to try. But if you imagine life as a game that is designed by someone, even if you don't want to believe that he's God, some force, if you imagine it as a game, then all of a sudden you start engaging in strategies that actually work in life, which is really interesting to me. The strategies that work in life are the same strategies that work in gaming. Practice, perseverance, focus, all those things that work in life and work in gaming kind of makes you wonder if, in fact, life really is a game. And I actually do think it's a game. You know, when I talk about the fact that we are here for epic and for quest and for adventure, what I'm really saying is don't worry about this life. Don't get tied up in knots about it. Look around. See what you can attack in terms of something to accomplish, something to conquer, something to learn. Go out there and get your arms around life and discover an epic for yourself. Discover an adventure for yourself. Because that's what we're here for. You know, we just aren't randomly put here. We're actually here to make discoveries and to accomplish things and to share those accomplishments and discoveries with others. Now, real quickly, because I actually, this will be a little bit short because I was off on the phone for a little bit. But real quickly, this, for instance, this project, my super secret project I'm working on right now, I have no idea where this is going. This is a project that on one side has the potential to make me a lot of money. And on another side has the potential to lose me a lot of money. It's in an area that I've never worked in before. I don't know anything about it. I'm having to marshal resources. It's like I'm running around collecting gold coins, you know, to where I can get enough gold coins to where I can buy the expertise that I need. And I'm pulling in favors from friends and friends. Do you know anybody that works in this and this and this and this? And one of the, like, for instance, one of the things I'm looking for is I'm looking for someone who does commercial work using CAD, computer-assisted design, in injection molding plastics for the consumer market. And I need to find somebody that I trust, that I have built some prototypes and things. And I mean, this is hard manufacturing real products. And I've never done this before. I've never run a business where I'm actually selling a physical product. It's always been about software. You know, it's always been about internet. It's been those guys. It's about writing, those types of things. They're all sort of soft products. This is a real hard product. And it's cool. Everybody I show it to goes, wow, that's really cool. But I'm completely out of my element. And I have no idea what I'm doing. But that's okay. it's a game. And I'm moving forward, and I'm collecting my tokens, and I'm exploring around. And at the end of the day, if I get to the end of this game, and I do nothing more than simply amass some knowledge from this and get to meet some new people, that's just fine. But if it goes big and goes different than that, that's just fine too. You know, I have no idea where it's going, but I'm going to enjoy the process of playing this very interesting game that the Lord has brought into my path, because one day I was just driving along and suddenly this idea appeared in my head. And when I get a little farther along with it, if I can get all the pieces together, I'll tell you about it. But for now, it is simply the Super Secret Project. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.